pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Wednesday morning. Text line, need to be in touch with the show. We still got time for you. 251-343-0106. Warming up in the bullpen, my colleague at 1819 News. She'll be with us in about a half hour. Erica Thomas, you know her. Probably a lot of you listen to Sean's show, but she'll make a rare appearance on the Jeff Poor Show today since we've saddled her with State House duties. Joining us now on the program, one of my favorite people. I got to know him really well when I was on in Huntsville, but State Senator Sam Gavan making time for us. Senator, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, getting any sleep these days?
Not really. I come to Montgomery to get sleep, which is a very antithetical way of thinking, but it's not my first rodeo either.
Yeah, well, those days go by quickly. It's just my oldest just turned 32 Sunday, so it's just like, what happened?
I think it goes by fast, yeah. You're watching these guys grow, and every day they seem bigger and, we got our three. I think we're in where we need to be.
You think your quiver's full?
Yeah, I think anything else would exceed the boundaries there, so we're at capacity, let's say. Well, how are things going this session? I guess as far as upstairs goes, things are going about what a fourth year of a quadrennium are supposed to go, it seems like.
They seem to be going very smoothly. I expected a little bit more pushback from the minority party on a few things, and, they didn't it just kind of worked its way out and worked its way through. They had their say and spoke, about the things they wanted to speak about. But some of the things like the, death penalty for child rapist, only one Democrat voted against that bill. And she's been very consistent that she's just opposed to the death penalty. And you can't, question her bona fides in protecting children because she's, she's one of the most, aggressive on protecting children. So that was not the issue. It's just purely she doesn't believe in it. And so I thought it was interesting to see that it was a 33-1 vote on that.
Yeah, me too. And because I expected a little more pushback, and I thought that was going to be the hot moment of the session with that, at least as far as bills go. And then you might draw a little bit of a filibuster or at least some, exhaust to run the clock down, but it didn't do that at all. It's things have been going relatively smooth.
Right. And we haven't seen we've gotten all the sunset bills through, and that's right. Something that, look, they can filibuster every bill, even their own bills, but it just seems to be consistently a target to hit confirmations, sunset bills, and local bills. Not like they can't argue an hour on every other bill, and even more than they do. In fact, I got from watching the Democrats last, over the several years, I started to believe that the rule was you could only speak for so much on certain bills. And I think sunset's the only one that is just an hour total.
Right.
But what we were just seeing them is in practice, they would only speak for an hour on a confirmation. They could do more. They could make even amendments and do things like that. But they it's just kind of like, okay, we're going to talk an hour on this. And they'd look up at the people in the gallery and go, hey, I'm going to vote for you. I'm going to vote to confirm you. This isn't about you, I know it's got to be frustrating when you're the one that's a nominee and you're being debated on the floor. But again, really, the debate's never really about them. They might be talking about the board or agency or university that they're associated with. But anyway, delay tactics that we have not really seen much this year. Now they have worked with us and said, hey, we don't want you to use but so many of these today and so many.
Right.
They want to stretch them out a little bit. Stretching them out's not a problem as long as they don't use them.
So. Well, the local bills, that was a little unprecedented, but it's kind of got some origins with gambling and not being able to pass local bills regarding gambling, maybe?
Well, it was a lot deeper than that. There was actually, that wasn't all on the, in fact, I would say most of it was on our side of the aisle, because there were some debates about certain things that were not getting through. And so there were a lot of holds put on bills, on local bills, from our side of the caucus. And so that kind of created a logjam. And then, and they weren't, so the House bills weren't passing. So like I passed two, I had no intention of dropping the two local bills I passed last year, but it became apparent that the House version was not going to pass. So I put mine in there. We got it through the Senate, no problem. And then the House passed it, no problem. But, you know, one of them dealt with an annexation issue that wasn't even in my district. But I did it to accommodate a House member who does overlap with me some, just not in that area.
Yeah, so you could, you know, it's like the House, at least the last few sessions, the front end is a little slower than the Senate, but it's the back end where once it gets to the floor, that maybe the House moves a little quicker than the Senate. And I mean, that maybe that's maybe not the case this year, but typically, you think?
I think so. They, you know, once a bill gets to the floor in the House, my
Prime dismissing, not the good things I've done. Walk away from trouble if you can.
Welcome back to the Jeff Forrest Show at FM Talk 106.5. Victim of the State House internet there. We'd made it for a good 2 hours and 15 minutes prior to this. Still joined by State Senator Sam Gravano, talking about the filibuster and sort of your opposition to it. You say, you know, there are times when you need it. You don't want to just abolish it outright. And like I was telling you, like my observation with it is at least keep the discussions germane to the bill and not allow the Democrats to just openly bash Republicans or whatever is on their mind. You think that's a fair approach?
Well, that's in the presiding chair's discretion, I think, is, you know, so that's up to, and it's not always the lieutenant governor sitting up there. There may be another senator that's presiding. I think that's up to them to rein that in. And sometimes, Jeff, it's just like, yeah, no, nobody likes to sit there and get bashed, and that's happened before. But, you know, of course, we've got some Senate rules on kind of how that's supposed to be brought in check a little bit. But I think sometimes it's just like, okay, they're going to talk. Does it really matter that much? I mean, it does get frustrating. You know, one of the things that I would like to see, and I understand the House has a rule like this, is that you can't just call for a bill to be read at length and then leave.
Right.
And, you know, you make them suffer through it, make them stay there, at least in the chamber, and while that's being read at length, because that is a delay tactic that, you know, I don't think we're really ready to get rid of. Well, I think it's actually I don't think it's something we can change. That may maybe even be a constitutional provision unless we waive it. I don't remember the details on that. But nonetheless, there are just some things that we can do to improve the situation. And as I said before, nibbling around the edges, maybe cut down on some times to do, you know, talk about the budget isolation rule or to talk about the special order calendar and things of that nature. That's the kind of stuff that we're talking about. But the good old-fashioned filibuster, we're going to keep that.
Well, tell me something. You got a bill dealing with the lieutenant governor. I'll walk us through a little bit sort of where you're coming from and what you'd like to see.
Okay. So the situation with the lieutenant governor is right now, and one thing I didn't know is that we didn't even have a lieutenant governor until around the 1900s or something like that. I just assumed we'd always had it, but I'd not looked into that. But we have a provision for a vacancy in both, if the governor office and the lieutenant governor's office are both vacant,
right,
then the pro tem of the Senate becomes acting governor and then presiding officer of the Senate and is still pro tem. And I started looking at that and I go, well, that's just impossible. I mean, you can't be governor, sit in the, you know, he can have somebody else sitting in the chair, but you still got to, there's certain things the pro tem has to do. There's certain things that the lieutenant governor, because it's vacant, can't do. because the pro tem does not have the authority necessarily. Some of the provisions have been changed to say the lieutenant governor, or rather, actually, I think they just say the presiding officer. That way that if the lieutenant governor's there, then it's lieutenant governor. If not, it's the pro tem. But if that happens in the first 2 years of a quadrennium, then there is a special election at the same time as the presidential election,
right?
As long as that vacancy occurs 60 days before then. But there is no provision for filling only the lieutenant governor. So day one, governor dies. Day one, the lieutenant governor dies. Then the lieutenant governor's office is vacant for 4 years. And all I'm saying is, hey, we've already got a procedure set up if something happens, which it never has, by the way, or at least it hasn't. And since the 1900s, let's go ahead and have a special election. Let the people, because we talked about, okay, we could let the Senate, you know, we could elevate the pro tem automatically, make him the lieutenant governor. Well,
do you really want that?
The last three, the current pro tem and the previous two pro tems at least did not want that.
Yeah.
Okay. And I can get it. There could be a situation where they are basically elevated to a statewide office, they maybe don't want to run or don't feel they're capable of running statewide or can't win, and all of a sudden their Senate seat is filled because there's a special election because of the vacancy, so they don't want that. And then I thought about, well, we could just elect amongst the, you know, the senators could elect a new pro tem. Well, the thought was the people aren't going to really like that, just 35 people making an election of who's going to be the lieutenant governor or constitutional office. So I think this is the kind of the best thing this is one of those, as many of my bills, I'd say about half of my bills this year I came up with on my own. There are no lobbyists, nobody, you know, just like I look at the law or look at the Constitution and say, I think we need a change.
Well, I just remember like when Ivy went in to fill the unexpired term of Bentley, and it just stayed vacant, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and then it's just like, oh, well, we're just making it work without a lieutenant governor. And then, like, the lieutenant governor's office, I guess, just Steve Windham got elected, and they're taking a lot of the authority away, it seems like. And of course,
lieutenant governor would say, I'm taking away a lot of the authority now with my bills, but you know, it's a separation of powers issue with what I'm doing. There are just a lot of things where for a House corollary, the Speaker makes the appointment or the Speaker resolves whatever the situation is. But in the Senate, so many times it's the Lieutenant Governor. The Lieutenant Governor is not part of the legislature. He is the executive.
Right.
And so why did the Senate ever give up the authority to control itself is beyond me, but it's not going to be turned overnight. I mean, I'm just going to chip away at it and try to get these things lined up over time. But where the Speaker does something in the House, the pro tem should do that in the Senate.
Let's get a break in here. We got State Senator Sam Gavan with us, 251-343-0106, time permitting. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
From the WKRG Newsroom, I'm Chad Petrie. Congressman Jabari Figures paying tribute to the late civil rights leader Jesse Jackson, who died at 84 on Tuesday. Figures writes, Jesse Jackson always showed up, whether in Mobile, Alabama, to protest with my father after the murder of Michael Donald, or in Iran to free American hostages when the U.S. government couldn't do it. Jesse Jackson advocated for America to be its best self. Fat Tuesday has come and gone. Now Ash Wednesday is here. Millions of Catholics across the world and also in Mobile will attend Ash Wednesday Mass, marking the start of the Lenten season as we get closer to Easter. With the parades wrapped up and the cleanup continuing in downtown Mobile, police department issuing their final tallies for the Mardi Gras season, an estimated 1,341,000 people attended parades in 2026. That's only down slightly from their total from the previous year. From the WKRG Newsroom, I'm News 5's Chad Petrie.
More, much more than this, I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday. More, just a few more minutes here with State Senator Sam Gavan. Senator, we spent some time on Huntsville Space Command. It's official now. We've had a little time to kind of get things, but does seem like that's coming together like it's needing to make it happen?
I think so. I think that's moving along. I don't stay as in tune to the, we get reports like we did Friday from Senator Britt and others that keep us, up to date about what's going on. But, I'm more focused for a variety of reasons. Number one, I'm working on a transaction, but, the Eli Lilly, is an exciting transaction for having that one, the biggest economic development project's ever been brought to the state of Alabama. And that was, of course, all set in place by the city of Huntsville buying that part of the Horton Farm there on 565 several years ago and putting us in a position to be able to jump right on that.
You brace for this, the crunch it'll have on infrastructure, more people coming into the area, the price of housing, the school systems, those are the things that are inevitable. They're going to happen. But I mean, whenever I hear from Tommy Battle, it just seems like you guys are kind of laying the groundwork knowing it's coming.
Well, we've always got to be preparing. I mean, we just did an option the other day. I prepared and the city council adopted for those, I guess people in Mobile don't know, I'm the dirt lawyer for the city of Huntsville. I have represented the city of Huntsville for 31 years. We secured an option on some land out in near Jackson County, right up near the Jackson County border. And just, part of it is spreading the wealth around and being able to have things on that end of town that, we have a lot of employees coming from Jackson County. And, that's a good thing for us because they don't, we wouldn't necessarily, clog the roads all the way into Huntsville, like many of them are doing now with having another opportunity. But, the Lilly thing is interesting because it's a whole lot of construction jobs. I mean, I want to say it's like 1,500 construction jobs. I don't remember the number, but it's over 1,000, and it's going to be over several years. But the permanent employees are going to be like in the 350 range. So that's those employees alone. Of course, you're going to have ancillary. What's going to happen? You're going to have more accountants. You're going to have more lawyers. You're going to have more, barbers. You're going to have more pizza drivers and stuff like that. So. There's going to be a multiplier with that, but they're good paying jobs. But the capital expenditures that they're putting out there that are not going to be abated because they're educational taxes is going to pump a lot of money into our school system. And so that's what you love to see about things like Facebook. Oh, and I still can't get into calling them Meta because when we did that deal, they were Facebook. But, they pump a lot of money. They don't have a ton of jobs. But they pump a lot of money into our school system. And so, it just works out great for our local community.
Yeah, so it's one of these situations you get the benefit. And the 1,500 construction jobs will be already there. So you won't have this influx necessarily. Or if you do, it's temporary and
correct.
People move around or whatever. But then
get them to come from Nashville, that's the thing. We need. We've got so many contractors in Nashville. We need it like, hey, come on down.
Yeah, but you get the benefit, and then it does seem like Huntsville's kind of keeping up better than a lot of places with the roads and things like that. And there's when I was there, the city of Huntsville kind of handled a lot of its business on its own.
Well, we do get support from the state, but a lot of this stuff that we do lay the groundwork. Of course, we complain all the time about how we don't, where's our billion-dollar road? We don't have one, and we've got $1 billion in needs, but we have not had the infrastructure that we really need to have there, and that's going to be a problem over time with the lack of that infrastructure. But, Huntsville is changing the dynamic of the state of Alabama, and, let's face it, a lot of what we've got, I just met with a contingency from Mobile last week. There's a lot of things that Mobile can do in coastal Alabama can do at the south, and we can do it at the north to raise Alabama up.
Senator, thanks. Like to cut you short there. We'll be right back to FM Talk 106.5.
And offers coming over.